is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. But things you may have noticed not going so overwhelmingly well for the Biden administration. Why not? After a lot of happy talk over the past half year, writes Rich Lowry of National Review, the real Biden presidency has emerged. It is not a colossus bestriding the political universe. No one would say that. Rather, a middling administration at best that will have trouble imposing its will even on its own party in Congress. And what does that mean for the upcoming midterm elections or even the upcoming elections in Virginia, New York City, places like that, New Jersey, that are going on this year? A new poll, and yes, it is a Republican poll, but it shows that Glenn Youngkin, the Republican nominee for governor of Virginia, is actually running ahead of Terry McAuliffe, who's trying to make a return trip as governor of Virginia, the Democrat. Rich Lowry, he is not only the editor of National Review, he is a contributing editor with Politico magazine. And he did his piece that I'm citing, The Real Biden Presidency Emerges, for Politico. So what's next? You sort of talk about an era of muddling through. In order to even muddle through, what does the Biden administration have to accomplish?
Well, the focus is going to be on these big spending bills. The bipartisan infrastructure bill that passed the Senate comfortably, but sitting in the House at the moment. And then this reconciliation bill that Bernie Sanders crafted, and that represents $3.5 trillion in spending. That's really the whole ballgame in terms of his domestic agenda. I think they'll get some of it. I don't think they'll get close to the total amount they're talking about now. And there's some chance that both could go down. And if that happens, you know, the bottom could fall out for Biden. You know, he's in a lot of reputable polls now. He's 45% or below. If he were there in November or next year or lower, Democrats would lose 50 seats in the House and would lose the Senate. So he's definitely in peril, and a lot depends on Joe Manchin, and he just has limited control over Joe Manchin, who's a Democrat, relative moderate, who represents a very Trumpy state.
Yeah, I mean, Trump carried, it was more than 20 points he carried West Virginia, right? I mean, it was overwhelming. I think that was, along with Wyoming, his most Trumpy state.
Yeah, so you attack Joe Manchin, you're a national Democrat, you're AOC or something, you increase his credibility in West Virginia. You make him stronger and more popular in West Virginia. So he really has the whip hand in this debate, and there are reports, we haven't heard him say this publicly, but reports earlier this week that he says his top line number for the reconciliation bill is a trillion or maybe 1.5. And if he's serious about that, they're not going to get more than 1.5 trillion. Now, I don't think there should be any $1.5 trillion bill in Washington, D.C. or anywhere else, but that would be a major come down from 3.5 and closer to what would just be a standard budget bill in Washington.
Well, wouldn't that be a big relief to many of these Democrats who actually have to go face the people in close Senate re-elections coming up?
Yeah, that's interesting, because you can make the case it's actually better for Biden if it's a much smaller bite of the apple rather than the whole 3.5. I think the downside scenario for Biden is, you know, he gets 1.5, let's say, somewhere between 1.5 and 2 trillion. That's a come down from the 3.5. It's the AOCs of the world, and the Democratic base is not going to be excited by that. At the same time, it allows Republicans justifiably to add up the numbers of all these spending bills and say this is a historic and irresponsible blowout that we can't afford. So there's some potential there he could get the worst of both worlds. But I just think Biden at the beginning, he was boosted by the contrast with Trump. He won by default because he wasn't Trump. A lot of wishful media coverage about how he's going to be the next FDR and LBJ, what seemed to be favorable conditions in terms of the virus getting eroded away with the vaccines and with the labor market healing, and just Trump's not a foil for Biden anymore, really. He's still out there, obviously, significant figure, but not doesn't loom as large as when he was president. And the labor market's still shaky, and we're still dealing with coronavirus and just all of those things. You know, he was dropping even prior to Afghanistan. He's been on a downward trajectory since June.
Okay, let me ask you about this, because it's recent history. The last two Democratic presidents both had a pattern. They came in with high expectations for Barack Obama, for Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, after those high expectations, his first midterm, he lost 55 House seats. And Barack Obama, his first midterm, came in with even higher expectations, and people really thought that he could, you'll pardon the expression, walk on water. And he lost 63 House seats, I believe it was. But they both came back and won re-election. Do you think that in any corner of his consciousness, Joe Biden and his aides might be thinking, well, maybe we'll have the same pattern. We'll lose to the Republicans. They'll take over the House. They'll take over maybe even the Senate. Then they'll overplay their hand. People always do. Mm-hmm. And then we'll come back as the alternative to Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, it's possible. And Michael, sometimes it just feels futile to be a pundit because these things do run in well-worn patterns. Not that we're not occasionally surprised by things, but the incumbent president taking a shellacking in the midterm is what always happens. So it would be shocking if they don't lose the House. They have zero margin to play with in the House, basically eight seats, which is nothing. And then usually, not always, but you've seen it doesn't mean the end of an incumbent president. But look, what they'll tell themselves is they're going to find some way not to lose or to diminish their losses, because it is sort of the effect of, you know, there's nothing he's going to be able to do legislatively if he loses the House and the Senate for the next 2 years after the midterms. Plus, if he loses the Senate, it makes it really hard on confirmations, including, crucially, a Supreme Court confirmation, if that comes up. And then we'll see where Biden is. You know, you got this factor that you didn't have with Clinton or Obama, which is age. And I think that's one thing that's hurt him on Afghanistan. It was hugely incompetent. He seemed overwhelmed by events. Now, that may have been true if he'd been 38 years old. He may have done the same thing, reacted the same way. But just being 78, I just think puts it in the back of everyone's mind, you know, is he still up for this? And how is he going to be three years from now?
Don't you think there are a lot of Democrats right now who are just licking their chops at digging into the abortion issue, and particularly at focusing on the Texas law? Is that if all else fails, Joe Biden would run as somehow protecting the sacred and cherished and popular among Democrats, at least, so-called right of abortion? Don't you expect
I don't think Texas itself is going to be a game changer nationally. One, you know, it's a year away, so that's a long time. But we have this Dobbs case. The court will decide next year. There's some significant chance that Roe will be overturned. Not a guarantee, but there's a significant chance. And then just our abortion politics, which has been a kind of a stalemate, you know, for 50 years, lurches into an entirely different realm. And I don't think Republicans have thought this through the way they should. I don't think they quite know how to talk about it yet. I'm not sure they know what they want to do when and if Roe is no longer an obstacle. So that's going to be a huge question mark over the politics of next year. I don't think it's a guaranteed winner for Democrats, but it's going to be literally uncharted territory if it happens.
I know that there is at least some talk by Bret Stephens actually wrote a piece in which he suggests that if Biden loses control of the House, he's through, and the Democrats will have to find a new candidate. And nobody is impressed with the candidacy of Kamala Harris. So what next for the Democrats? We will continue the conversation. We'll also find out QAnon is taking a position on how to cure COVID. Really? We'll get to that coming up on The MedVed Show. We'll be right back. Michael Medved show. President Biden is giving a speech, fairly emotional speech, about pleading with people to get their kids vaccinated, children over the age of 12, and between 12 and 18. And it's talking about new vaccine mandates for portions of the federal government in which he is in charge. It's sad because it's going to be heard, I know, as so partisan. And it shouldn't be partisan. And one of the mistakes among many, many, many that President Biden has made so far has been not to actually make a point of making the pitches for people to get vaccinated, making the pitches for people to be cautious, making the pitch for people to overcome the COVID-19 situation, to make that bipartisan. And one of the ways to have done that would have been to work with a bipartisan group of presidents. And or political leaders. And if Trump didn't want to do it and join, say, President Clinton and President Obama. And again, people will hear that from someone who isn't at the same time asking for their vote or their support. And there's all kinds of reasons about why people expect that Biden is desperate in that regard. This is a shocking story, just breaking news from the Chicago Sun-Times. The Chicago Sun-Times reports angry QAnon backers want a hospital to treat supporters COVID-19 with unapproved drug. Key backers of the QAnon conspiracy theory, which of course believes that there is a elite liberal cabal that drinks blood and worships Satan and traffics in young children. They are now carrying out a coordinated campaign against a Northside hospital that has refused to prescribe an unapproved drug to treat one of the group's followers for COVID-19. You'll never guess what drug. Ivermectin. QAnon supporters have in recent days targeted Amita Resurrection Medical Center with a small in-person protest and a flood of phone calls, the hospital confirmed. The supporters are demanding that doctors give a hospitalized ally ivermectin, a medication approved for treating parasites in both humans and animals, that has garnered huge interest in recent weeks, with the vaccine-averse increasingly touting it as a groundbreaking coronavirus treatment. Well, that's a seal of approval, turned down by the FDA and turned down by the CDC, but approved enthusiastically by QAnon. And you know you can count on them, right? Well, not ideally. I was mentioning the difficulty that Joe Biden has. There's a piece by Brett Stevens, which is very insightful and very well written, as usual. And he says Biden can still save his presidency. But it's actually Biden can still save his presidency with a big question mark next to it. He writes in the New York Times, "This September 11th, a diminished president will preside over a diminished nation. We are a country that could not keep a demagogue from the White House," so says Brett Stevens, "could not stop an insurrection mob from storming the Capitol, could not win, or at least avoid losing, a war against a morally and technologically retrograde enemy, cannot conquer a disease for which there are safe and effective vaccines, and cannot bring itself to trust the government, the news media, the scientific establishment, the police, or any other institution meant to operate for the common good. Our civilization was born optimistic and enlightened, writes Bret Stephens, at least by the standards of the day. Now it feels as if it's fading into paranoid senility. Wow. Joe Biden was supposed to be the man of the hour. A calming presence, exuding decency, moderation, and trust. As a candidate, he sold himself as a transitional president, a fatherly figure in the mold of George H.W. Bush, who would restore dignity and prudence to the Oval Office after the mendacity and chaos that came before. It's why I voted for him, says Bret Stephens, as did so many others who once tipped red. Instead, Biden has become the problem of the hour, not the man of the hour, the emblem of the hour, headstrong but shaky, ambitious but inept. He seems to be the last person in America to realize that whatever the theoretical merits of the decision to withdraw our remaining forces from Afghanistan, the military and intelligence assumptions on which it was built were deeply flawed. The manner in which it was executed was a national humiliation and a moral betrayal, and the timing was catastrophic. Why so catastrophic? He's exactly right about this. We find ourselves commemorating the first great jihadist victory over America in 2001, right after delivering the second great jihadist victory over America in 2021. The 9/11 memorial at the World Trade Center, water cascading into one void and then trickling out of sight into another, has never seemed more fitting. Now Biden proposes to follow this up with his $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation bill, which the Times' Jonathan Weissman describes as, quote, the most significant expansion of the nation's safety net since the war on poverty in the 1960s. But last week, Joe Manchin, the Democrat from West Virginia, published an essay in the Wall Street Journal in which he said, I, for one, will not support a $3.5 trillion bill or anywhere near that. In other words, things are gliding into absolutely nowhere. And the most important thing, it seems to me, I remember it was a joke during the Trump administration, and people laughed about it, including President Trump. They were going to do Infrastructure Week. They were going to do Infrastructure Week. Well, it's the same kind of thing here. They were talking a lot about infrastructure. They actually passed a big infrastructure bill, $1.5 trillion, in the Senate. But now they're sitting on it, and we're going nowhere, and no one knows what is next in terms of the political divisions in a very divided country. 1-800-955-1776. More coming up. Medved Show. One of the things I mentioned before that I really care about is I believe there is such a thing as the truth. The truth is not just relative. Well, you have this truth, you have this truth. There are big truths. And remember, I had a caller from Redmond. I forget the first name. I'm sorry. But someone called in from Redmond, and he mentioned that President Trump had taken ivermectin and it worked for him. And I said on the air media, I don't believe that's correct. I don't think there's any evidence at all the president ever took anything like ivermectin. And looked it up. They have a list of all the 8 drugs that President Trump took. None of them were ivermectin. None of them were horse wormers. None of them were human forms of ivermectin. None of that had anything to do with ivermectin. It's just not true. And I hate that. And then we just got a call, well-meaning lady. Thank you very much for calling. She said, I think Michael might need to know that the government of Japan has just approved and recommended ivermectin. And here is a an immediate correction. Jeremy, who shall I credit for this? This is Japan has not endorsed ivermectin as COVID-19 treatment. Social media posts suggest that Japan's government recommends using antiparasitic drug ivermectin to treat COVID-19, citing remarks by the chairman of the Tokyo Medical Association. This is misleading. While he cautiously supported the treatment, the association does not represent the country's government, which has not endorsed ivermectin for that use. Tokyo's Medical Association chairman holds live press conference recommending ivermectin to all doctors for all COVID patients. Japan's government is one of the most conservative and cautious in the world. That is clear. Huge news, says an August 22nd, 2021 tweet, 2021 tweet, featuring a video of association chairman Haruo Ozaki. Well, it turns out the AFP Canada provided the fact check. It isn't true. It didn't happen. The government of Japan does not recommend it. And it's very, very difficult when people are so regularly, so frequently, so pointlessly misled. And I do want to be a corrective on that. And concerning Joe Biden and the future of this administration, Brett Stevens concludes, and I think it's very, very much worth thinking about. If history repeats itself in the 2022 midterms, I doubt that even Joe Biden's closest aides think he has the stamina to fight his way back in 2024. In other words, if he loses both houses of Congress. And that would be an unusual thing, because generally presidents run for a second term. Biden, of course, being 78 years old, would be, I think, a surprise to no one if he backed away. Has Kamala Harris shown the political talent to pick up the pieces? Perhaps what will save the Democrats is that Biden's weakness will tell Donald Trump to seek and almost certainly gain the Republican nomination. But then there's the good chance he'd win the election. There's a way back from this cliff's edge. It begins, he says, with Biden finding a way to acknowledge publicly the gravity of his administration's blunders. The most shameful aspect of the Afghanistan withdrawal was the incompetence of the State Department when it came to expediting visas for the thousands of people eligible to come to the United States. Accountability could start with Antony Blinken's resignation. The president might also seize the strategic pause Joe Manchin has proposed and push House Democrats to pass the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill and not holding it hostage to the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill. Infrastructure is far more popular with middle-of-the-road voters than the Great Society reprise, who was never supposed to be a part of the Biden brand. And then he says this, and this is chilling. My sense is that Biden will do neither. The last few months have told us something worrying about this president. He's proud, he's inflexible, and thinks he's much smarter than he really is. That's bad news for the administration. It's worse news for the country that desperately needs to avoid another failed presidency. I think that's serious and worth considering. Also worth considering is the debate that broke out between two political giants, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Sarah Palin. Remember her? This debate started with AOC appearing on CNN with Anderson Cooper, and then Palin reacted to her interview in an appearance on Fox News. Here's AOC first, clip two.
the law that was passed in Texas. We know that anti-choice bills are not about being pro-life, because if they were about being pro-life, then the Republican Party would support, frankly, an agenda that helps guaranteed health care, that helps ensure that people who do give birth that don't have the resources to care for a child can have that care for a child. So we know that none of this is about life. None of this is about supporting life. What this is about is controlling women's bodies and controlling people who are not cisgender men. This is about making sure that someone like me as a woman or any menstruating person in this country cannot make decisions over their own body.
Okay. What other kind of menstruating person is there who isn't a woman? Let's not go too detailed. Sarah Palin has a response. Clip 11.
Wow. Oh, AOC, she's really milking this, isn't it? She is such a fake feminist that she would bring up an issue like this and try to use it to make some kind of political point. That's not equality, right? Don't even get me started on this. This just makes my stomach sick what she has done. She should be embarrassed to even have tried to bring up an issue like that and make her political point. She's so off base politically, but off base even in this analysis or whatever it is that she's throwing out there. She's milking the whole female thing, and as a real feminist, I'm embarrassed for her.
Don't you think it would be get some ratings if they actually went face to face? It's not Lincoln Douglas, but still. AOC clapped back in a video posted to social media, saying to Sarah, "Does my existence make you mad? Listen.
My existence make you mad? Does the fact that, yes, I am a mouthpiece for the people of New York's 14th Congressional District upset you? Well, I have help for you. Call 1-800-CRY-NOW. That's 1-800-CRY-NOW.
Can our country begin to maybe use this occasion that's coming up on Saturday, the anniversary, 20th anniversary of September 11th, to maybe get a little bit of that determination to come together a little bit more meaningfully? I mean, how ridiculous, by the way, to suggest that both sides, there are people on both sides who have profound emotional feelings about abortion, which is exactly why the idea of one size fits all, basically imposed by a court rather than by democratic processes, was such a disaster in 1973. We will be right back on the MedVed Show.
So here's the deal.
Michael MedVed.
So the deal is...
The Associated Press is reporting that law enforcement officials are concerned by the prospect of violence at a rally planned for the nation's capital next week. They're planning, in fact, to reinstall protective fencing that surrounded the U.S. Capitol for months after the January 6th insurrection. Although no specific measures have been announced, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi hinted during her weekly news conference yesterday at extra safety precautions for the September 18th rally by saying that, a week from this Saturday. She said, now these people are coming back to praise the people who were out to kill, out to damage members of Congress, successfully causing the deaths. Successfully is not the word, but that's the word because that's what they set out to do of our law enforcement. In any event, the rally, which really I hadn't heard that much about, maybe you have, but it's a rally that is demanding justice for J6 rally. J6 meaning January 6th. They believe that a lot of people have been wrongly indicted. They're also demanding justice for Ashley Babbitt, who was shot by a Capitol Police officer as she was busting through a broken window into the House chamber. This entire thing, just what our country needs right now. Right in the midst of the pandemic, right in the midst of the upsurge and the hysteria, and the hysteria on the left about the Texas voting law is only exceeded by the hysteria about the Texas abortion law, which will get reviewed and probably will get tempered to some extent by the Supreme Court. But for goodness sake, so now we have this, the intelligent assessment dated September 7th, 2 days ago, notes that in recent days, the department, that's the Capitol Police Department, and partner agencies have found more violent online talk surrounding the hashtag justice for J6 rally. It's organized by Look Ahead America, a discussion thread on the far-right site 4chan, home of QAnon, initially at least, includes calls to do justice against local Jews and corrupted officials. It also says the demonstration should be used as a vehicle to participate in violent acts against local Jewish centers and liberal churches. Oh, so they have a lot of targets, huh? While law enforcement is distracted. Another comment from the thread reads, I will be there with my AR-15, even though legally I can't have one, not in Washington, D.C. Look Ahead America, a group led by former Trump campaign employee Matt Brainard, asked for a permit in Union Square at noon on September 18th for 700 participants, a number that has risen from 500. Brainard has said Look Ahead America is focused on demanding justice for political prisoners and for Ashley Babbitt, the attacker who was fatally shot January 6th by Capitol Police Lieutenant Michael Byrd as she was attempting to breach the speaker's lobby through a broken window. All I can say is both sides now seem to be so profoundly eager to go back and relitigate and revisit aspects of January 6th. And I'm not sure how, because there really is no kind of bipartisan cooperation going on at all in terms of the investigation that they started, Nancy Pelosi with her Select Committee of the House. And they had testimony, and now where? And are they going to get in any more information about the actual January 6th before they have this new protest coming up to protest January 6th? This is one of many, many problems that Joe Biden really has to deal with. There's another problem, which is I'd mentioned all these upcoming elections, but I forgot to mention the most important one, which is the election to recall Governor Newsom in California. This is what he sounded like campaigning against his recall as governor, which could happen. I mean, I think he's supposed to have gained a point or two, but it's still within the margin of error. It's very close. So everybody should vote. But here is Governor Gavin Newsom, clip 6.
But we have a chance and an opportunity to make history of our own here in the state of California by rejecting that cynicism, rejecting that fear, by rejecting that kind of divisiveness. California, we are better than that. We have the opportunity by voting no on this recall. We're better than that. We're better than that. Now, you know what happens if we don't vote no on this recall, though? I mean, this isn't even close. On the other side of this recall, if we're not successful in rejecting this recall, Larry Elder is going to be sworn in as your next governor. I want to sound like Obama saying, don't boo, vote. But Larry Elder's running away with it, guys. It's just a matter of weeks. The only thing stopping that from happening is each and every one of them.
Okay, Larry Elder might turn that into a campaign ad. He's saying Larry Elder's running away with it. Larry Elder was attacked by a white woman in a gorilla mask who threw an egg with him, threw an egg at him. And rock star Greg Tomlin, who did such a good job on the show yesterday, Greg asked a good question. If the racial identity had been reversed, if it had been a... not a black candidate, but a white candidate who had been pelted by a black person wearing a gorilla mask, or you figure it out. It certainly would not have been treated in the same way. Elder was quickly whisked away in a vehicle shortly after the assault attempt. It didn't sound very good. And again, it's just part of what is going on in our country right now. Bitterness, divisiveness. It's a shame. So do we need a superhero to make things better? Well, one achieved great success at the box office over the last couple of days. Name of that superhero, Shang-Chi. Listen.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
Marvel Studios is back with a new comic book hero inserted into a post-Avengers Endgame world, trying to connect with his magical, mystical, long-lost father, a martial arts master played by Tony Leung, in Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, now playing in theaters everywhere.
The Ten Rings gave our family power. If you want them to be yours one day, you have to show me you are strong enough to carry them.
But this goofy and confusing plotline isn't nearly strong enough to carry this more than 2-hour running time. The special effects and flying dragons and balletic battle scenes are all elegant and occasionally impressive, but become tedious long before the film bangs and wheezes to its get ready for the sequel conclusion. It's rated PG-13 for plenty of comic book violence. 2 stars for Marvel Studios' Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. And tomorrow on the MedVed Show, it will be our last day before the formal anniversary, a 20th anniversary of September 11th. We'll be talking to somebody who we spoke to at the time. He wrote, I think, the best column that anyone wrote at the time of the attack. His name is Leonard Pitts, and I'm eager to speak with him. He's a columnist at the Miami Herald. I'm eager to speak with him about what he thinks has changed for the better and for the worse in the country since September 11th. We'll also be speaking to Andy McCarthy, a veteran prosecutor of evil terrorists who's been part of the response to 9/11. And the National Archives have introduced harmful language alerts for new editions of historic documents, including the Constitution. That and much more, including new reports that, guess what, climate change isn't creating so many terrible floods. We'll cover that as well and more in this greatest nation on God's green earth.